All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
You can't travel on Windy Mountain because the white ghost travels there. Some say that it's a yeti. Snow White's the color of its hair. Just like the dinosaurs, he should have died off long ago. But a will to survive has kept him alive in Alaska's frozen snows.
And welcome back. This is the X Zone. I am Rob McConnell. We're coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. Online, X Zone at xzoneradiotv.com. All social media sites, X Zone Radio TV. And for the broadcast schedule of the X Zone Broadcast Network, visit us at www.xzbn.net. And the X Zone comes to you Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern, right here on the Talkstar Radio Network, Mutual Broadcast Network, and the X Zone Broadcast Network and Simul Radio. Wow. We're going down to Arizona now, where we're going to be speaking to the members of the Arizona Paranormal Activity Team. Joining us is Gary Balls, who is the gentleman behind it. And then Eric. Eric, you're going to have to say your name. I don't want to slaughter it.
It's Eric Bohat.
All righty. And first of all, gentlemen, welcome to the X-Zone. Nice talking to you in Arizona. Before we started talking on air, I asked you about, you know, the COVID situation down there. And has the COVID situation actually taken a bite out of the investigations that you and your team do, Gary?
Yeah, it has actually. It was hard enough to find places to begin with to investigate. But with this COVID, it's pretty much shut us down for the past year.
So when you guys are out there doing the investigations, what kind of investigations do you do?
We do anything from abandoned hospitals to museums. We've done a few residentials.
We've also been to a few cemeteries as well.
Yep.
Now, Gary, how did you get started in doing what you're doing?
Well, I've always been interested in the paranormal to begin with. And about 15 years ago, I actually lost my daughter to leukemia.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. She actually came to me one night while I was sleeping, and to me it was just a sign for her saying that everything was all right and she was good. And that really got me interested in the paranormal.
And how about you, Eric?
So I think it was about 2010. Just one night I was watching, you know, the Travel Channel and the Ghost Adventures was on, and I always felt like something was weird in that house anyway. So that show really got me hooked onto it. And then, and Gary and I used to work together, and we would kind of discuss the show and decided that, you know, maybe we'd want to investigate. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Let's say I call you up and I say, hey, Gary and Eric, it's Rob. You know, I'm down here in Arizona staying at a hotel, and guys, I think it's haunted. How do you guys proceed with your investigation?
Well, one of the things we do is we try to do to, look up some background, some history on the area, if there's anything that has been reported in the past. Then we will get with you, seeing that you're the person reporting it to us, and do some questions with you and see what kind of experiences you've had, and then set up a time to come in and investigate.
Now, what kind of equipment do you and your team use, Gary?
We use EMF detectors. We have our audio recorders. We have night vision cameras. We have the spirit box. Those are our main go-to ones. We also use the mini mag flashlights.
Why with mini mags?
We've gotten responses with them. What you do with them is because they have the twist top on them. They don't have a push button or anything like that. And you will take in and twist the top so that the flashlight is just barely off. And we'll shake it around and stuff on camera to show people that it's, you know, vibrations aren't going to set it off. And then we will ask questions to the spirits and try and get them to use the flashlight by turning it on and off. And we've actually gotten some very good responses with that.
All right, so let me just understand how this is done. You use the mag light that has the on-off as well as the intensity of the beam on the lens area, right?
Correct, and that's one of the things we will actually do is we will ask the spirits if, you know, if they're there, if they want to make the light brighter or if they want to make it dimmer or just turn it off completely. And like I said, we've gotten some very good responses with that.
How do you guys explain that a spirit that cannot be seen, has no mass, has no density, has no visual body that you can see, can actually turn something to effect to a point where it makes the flashlight brighter or dimmer the light? How do you explain that?
So my understanding of it and how I view it is spirits view as energy sources, and you're correct, and sometimes we can't see them. Some devices that we can that we use can see them, such as the night vision or, you know, the ultraviolet flashlights and or cameras, but they're an energy source nonetheless, and if they can use that their energy source just to bridge that small narrow gap between, you know, the battery and the filament, they could actually turn that on. And a lot of the times we'll go to the flashlight when we're at a new location and these spirits have not been yet communicated by, you know, paranormal team or anybody, I guess I would say on the living side.
Right.
So to communicate using our devices could be challenging. So whenever we pull out the flashlight mini mag, I feel like it's the easiest way for them to be able to, you know, give a yes or no answer, or depending on how much energy they want to use to bridge that gap, they can make that light go brighter, dim, or even flicker. And a lot of it's pretty much as we ask if they can make it go brighter or dimmer. So I think it's just them using their energy that is them to, you know, bridge that gap of the battery and the filament.
If they are energy, why do we need special equipment to see them at night?
I think it's just a thing with our eyes. Our eyes are able to see some of the different rays of light. That's why sometimes they'll use those ultraviolet camera lenses.
Right.
And then even with the night vision, you know, it tries to harness as much light as possible. So I think that's why you see more stuff with the devices that we would use rather than our own eyes.
Very interesting. Gary, what is the spirit box or the ghost box that you were talking about?
The spirit box is basically, it looks like a little transistor radio, and it scans through radio frequencies, but it scans at a high rate of speed. So if we're scanning and we actually hit, say, like on a radio station, it doesn't stay on that frequency long enough to actually get a word from that radio station. So when we do get words that come across, usually they will come across on 3, 4, or 5 frequencies, and that's how they think that the spirits use the white noise of the frequencies to communicate with us.
Okay, but if the scanning is done so fast that it doesn't stop at a radio station, which probably in your area, I believe, would be anywhere from 10,000 to 50,000 watts, how is it that the equipment can stop and pick up the voice?
It doesn't actually stop. It continues to scan.
Oh, I see.
The only way it stops is if we stop it ourselves. But it continues to scan, so when we get a voice that comes across, it actually comes across on several frequencies instead of stopping when we hear a voice.
In the years that you folks have been doing your investigations, by the way, how many years has it been?
Well, we started in 2011, so we're coming up on, it was actually January 7th, 2011 was our first investigation at Vulture Mine in Arizona. So we're coming up on 10 years.
Well, congratulations, guys. To this date, what has been your most successful investigation?
I would say our most successful would be the museum up in Oracle. It used to be an old tuberculosis resort.
Mm-hmm.
It was many things over the years, but we have been up there and investigated probably half a dozen times. And every time we've gone up there, we've gotten some kind of paranormal activity, whether it be voices or shadow figures. At one point, we actually caught a white mist that generated in one of the hospital rooms. And then disappeared. Anytime we do an investigation where we take guests along, we usually mm-hmm. will go to that place just because of the fact that we do get a lot of activity up there at the museum.
Let's go back to the premise where ghosts are energy. Why do they stay, let's say, for example, in this case, in the hospital or the institution? Why don't they just go somewhere else?
So it's the belief in the paranormal world that some of them don't even know that they have passed away. They may have passed away suddenly and, mm-hmm. and don't realize it. Some are just comfortable where they're at and they don't want to leave. And then you can get to the dark side of things where there are entities that may not want to let these spirits leave.
Do you believe that?
I do, actually. I do. I believe that the dark entities actually feed off of the energy from the good spirits.
So how do you and your team protect yourselves from having something attached to yourselves and bring it home with you? Like, oh, honey, look what I brought home.
We have actually, if we've gone into a place where we feel that there may be a dark energy or something like that, we will, as a team, we will say prayers. Before and after the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
I wear a cross. I know a couple of the other team members do also. When it comes to the dark energies, we try to avoid that as much as possible. We really don't want to deal with bringing anything home to our families or anything. So we do as much as we can to protect ourselves.
And on top of all that, before we leave, we make it known that mm-hmm. And I don't know how much this actually would actually protect us more so than just, you know, drawing a line in the sand, for lack of a better term. You know, we tell not allowed to follow us. Please don't follow us home. You know, stay here where you're comfortable and whatnot. Something along those lines where we try to, like, make it known verbally out loud that they're not welcome to come back with us.
Got about a minute before I have to go for my first break. How haunted is Arizona?
I would say Arizona is probably one of the most haunted states in the United States. There isn't a single town in Arizona that mm-hmm. you can't go to, and there's some reports of some type of paranormal activity somewhere in the town.
Interesting. So I would imagine that because of Arizona's rich history, that that has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like our very first investigation was Vulture Mine, which was an old gold mine mm-hmm. By Wickenburg, Arizona, and it was actually one of our best investigations and what really got us hooked into paranormal investigations.
All right, gentlemen, please stand by. You and I have to take our first break. And Exo Nation, if you'd like more information about the Arizona Paranormal Activity team, visit them on Facebook. We'll be back on the other side of this commercial break as we continue here in the X Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com, on all social media sites, X Zone Radio TV. And to find out what's going on the X Zone broadcast network, www.xzbn.net. And for the programming we have on the X Zone TV channel, which is exclusive to SimulTV, visit SimulTV.com. I'm Rob McConnell. We'll be back. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Blackwater Hattie lived back in the swamp where strange green reptiles crawl. Snakes hang thick from the cypress trees like sausage on a smokehouse wall. Where the swamp is alive with a thousand eyes and all of them watching you. Stay off the track of Hattie Shack in the back of the Black Bayou.
Welcome back, everyone. This is The X-Zone. I'm Rob McConnell. I'm joined by Eric and Gary from the Arizona Paranormal Activity Team, and you can find out more about them on Facebook. Just kind of put it in the search engine, Arizona Paranormal Activity Team. Hey, guys, thanks very much for joining us here on Halloween month in The X-Zone.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so Arizona's really rich in history. I understand that there's a lot of mines out your way.
Yeah, we've got everything gold to copper, silver. You pretty much find anything out here.
When you go in to do an investigation in a mine, is it any different than when you would go, if you would go into a home, or do the all the investigations still, or do they all follow a same format?
Well, I think when we do a residential, they're slightly different. With a residential, you're dealing with one or two people in the home that have had experiences that you're trying to get information from. And then when you actually go to these mining towns in the mine, you have all this, you know, history, rich history from years and years that, you know, we kind of try to siphon through to find out the stories of these miners and the people that lived in these towns. So we get with the people like with Vulture Mine, we got with the couple that actually ran the place and, you know, learn some of the history from them so that we're better equipped as we do the investigation throughout the night.
It sounds like you and your team are rich historians as well. Not only do you cover the aspect of the paranormal during your investigation, but you actually investigate the history. And how important is that in better understanding the case you're working on?
Well, I think it's very important when you're doing like some of the mining towns, because you, as you learn the history, you learn some of the terminology, and you can also get things that we call trigger objects to help entice, you know, some of the paranormal activity and some responses back from the spirits. So, for example, we took a little tiny vial of like flaked gold when we were doing the Vulture Mine, and you know, use that as like, hey, I got some, you know, flaked gold here. If you want it, you just got to come out and ask for it. You know, and that tends to really help when you start using trigger props and objects from that era or that's relevant to the spirits that may or may not be in that area or land.
Have you ever had the opportunity of actually speaking to a spirit without using any electronic devices?
I cannot say that I've actually asked out loud and got a response that I've heard, like an intelligent response back to me without using something like the spirit box or the digital recorder. And that's not to say that I haven't heard disembodied voices,
right,
but to have an intelligent response back to one of my questions, I cannot say that I've had that happen.
Have you ever seen a full body apparition?
With my own eyes, I have not seen a full body apparition, no, but I have seen like certain shadows that don't make sense down a hall, you know, when there's no light and there's a shadow that's darker than the surrounding areas kind of move. But to, you know, a full body where you have legs, arms, you know, and the head moving, I have not, unfortunately, seen that yet.
If you actually go to our Facebook page, you will see one of the photos that we took from Vulture Mine. It was actually the very first picture we took when we got there. And it was actually at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And you can actually see two apparitions in the picture. And for us to get something during the day like that, it was just amazing. And our, like I said, our very first picture, our very first investigation, it really blew us away.
I guess it would. Why do you think these ghosts want to communicate? Or do paranormal investigators, just by their presence being at a location, do you guys entice the spirit to communicate?
I believe so. When we do our investigations up at Oracle at the museum, we actually it usually takes about an hour, hour and a half or so before we start getting any type of communication. So it's, I think what really helps is familiarity. We've been up there enough times that the spirits are familiar with us. That's one of the reasons residential investigations are hard to do, because the spirits there are familiar with the people that are living there. But mm-hmm. when you have strangers come in, they may not be so eager to show themselves. And I believe that the spirits want to communicate with us, if anything, maybe to understand what's happening to them.
And if I could touch on that, I think it gives them, you know, a feeling of life again, a feeling of maybe warmth that they may be seeking, and then maybe that's why they're still, you know, entrapped in wherever they're right. entrapped at, whatever location it may be.
You were saying that sometimes it can take up to an hour and a half for the activity to start. Why would it take that long? Why wouldn't it be instantaneously, since they're there and you're there?
Well, I think, especially when it's a new area, usually when we go to a new area, such mm-hmm. as the Oracle Historical Society Museum that was that tuberculosis resort,
yeah.
I think it's the familiarity of this, having new people in there, and especially when the spirits have never been communicated with before, I think there's maybe a learning curve on how they can communicate, and it's new to them like it is new to us on how to use these devices, our electronic devices, to relay their messages, you know, back and forth between us and them.
Do you form a relationship with any of the spirits?
I believe we do. Like I said, when we do up at Oracle, mm-hmm. Eric and I have both had our names called out either on the digital recorders or on the spirit box. So it makes you feel like that there's a personal connection there.
Do you find that there's more spiritual or ghost activity when it comes to the Halloween era?
No, I think that's a stigma. I think it just, that feeds into the spooky aspect of just spirits in general. Mm-hmm. I don't think the spirits come out at night per se on Halloween or in the month of October.
Why is it that paranormal investigations, ghost hunting, is done at night and not during the day?
I think a lot of it has to do with the quietness of it, for one thing. If you're trying to get voice phenomena from mm-hmm. spirits, it's pretty hard to pick up during the day when there's a lot of activity going on and noises around you. So I think that's mainly why it's done at night. That and the types of cameras that we use, as far as like the night vision and the other types of cameras, work better at night.
Would you say that, based on your experience, that the ghosts are in the location during the day as well as the night?
Yeah, so we've kind of made it a point. So when we first did the Oracle Historical Society, mm-hmm. We did the investigation one night, and then the next week, the society members, the board members, wanted us to come back and do an evidence presentation. So we did that, and we showed them what we had, and there was a woman there. She said her niece was writing a book about paranormal, and she kind of wanted our take upon it. And in that book, she talks about how spirits use thermal energy as long as electronics and stuff like that. So that kind of got us thinking, like, we should start our investigation in the day and run through the night. And like Gary mentioned, that picture that we took was about mm-hmm. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's a full body, in my mind, apparition, not caught by our own eyes, but by our camera. So we do try to incorporate investigating during the day, and we have heard disembodied voices. For example, at the Dodge Phelps Hospital in Ajo, we actually heard with our own ears during the day while we're setting up two women, or what it sounds like, two women speaking down by the nurse's station, right down from the room that we were setting up our, you know, our main hub.
Now, have you folks ever been called to a new home or a new business to do an investigation, or do the spirits just usually make themselves at home in a place that they're more familiar with, which could be much older?
So we've been called anywhere from a little travel trailer all the way to a restaurant, which wasn't a new build restaurant, but it was new to the owners. So I think, like in regards to the travel trailer, for example, that what we would determine is that the spirit or entity is attached to some kind of personal prized object that the people that own that place are continuing to carry with them, or it's attached just to one of them in general, like maybe being a family member or whatnot. And then with the restaurant being an older building in Apache Junction, Arizona, it could just be, you know, those spirits passing through, or just they spent most of their time in that one area or in that building. So, I mean, it really varies, and we kind of try to figure those questions out as our investigation carries on.
Speaking about Native Americans, when you're doing the investigation, have you ever been called to a location where there is allegedly activity being caused by a Native American?
No, we haven't dealt with anything like that yet. It's actually, if it's on the reservation itself, it's actually very difficult to do any type of investigation unless they invite us in, because you usually have to get permission from the council,
right,
to type of investigations on the reservations.
How much does one's own personal philosophical or religious beliefs play in either the part of the person who's having the experience or the people doing the investigation?
Well, I think there's some people out there that they can clearly see and hear and feel something's going on, mm-hmm. and they choose to turn a blind eye to it because maybe they don't want to believe, or they just don't believe, and like they don't pay any attention to it. To where there's people that really believe and they go out searching for it, they try to get a good understanding of what's happening, why it's happening, who's making it happening, and the history behind, you know, that individual entity.
Have you ever had an experience where the haunting is being caused by a child that's crossed over?
I was actually, one of our team members, my son actually, and I, and his friend had gone out to Adamsville Cemetery, and there are quite a few children's graves out there. Mm-hmm. And we were standing next to one of the graves, and it wasn't one of the children's, but we were standing by one of the other ones. And from the direction of the children's grave, we actually heard a little girl laughing. And we actually heard that with our own ears. It wasn't on the digital recorder or anything like that. So, that was actually it was a nice experience to be able to capture that with our own ears, but yet it's kind of a sad experience because there's a child still there.
That's right. All right, gentlemen, please stand by. We've got to take our break at the bottom of the hour for the news. And ExoNation, if you'd like to find out more about Gary and Eric and about their team, visit their Facebook page, Arizona Paranormal Activity Team. On Facebook. Once again, it's Arizona Paranormal Activity Team. This is the X-Zone. We're celebrating Halloween all month this year. We decided that there's so much interest in the paranormal, things that go bump in the night, that we decided to dedicate the entire month to the people who go out there, like Eric and Gary, and who try to make sense and to try and, you know, do the research, the investigation, to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is more to this world that we live in than we really understand or even want to accept. And once again, if you'd like to visit their Facebook page, Arizona Paranormal Activity Team. I'll be back on the other side of this news break as we continue here in the X Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. Don't forget, COVID is running rampant in the province of Ontario and Quebec. Health officials and government officials say you have to wear a mask in public places, and social distancing is in effect. Law enforcement has the authority to enforce it, fine you, or even put you in jail. I'll be back on the other side of this break. Don't go away. And welcome back, everyone. This is the X-Zone. I've got the members, a couple of members from the Arizona Paranormal Activity team on the show this hour. Gary and Eric are with us. And guys, thanks very much for joining us. It's very interesting to hear about the investigations that you've done. And why do you think that there are people who go on tours, ghost walks, in whether it's the historical areas or not? You'll have people who will experience something, and yet the people beside them may experience nothing. How do you guys explain that as experts?
Well, we had a situation where we were in a cemetery, mm-hmm. and we walked through one area, and as we walked through there, Eric got his jacket tugged on, and he didn't really think anything of it at first. And then we went through and we got to the end of the walk and we turned around and came back mm-hmm. in the exact same spot. I had what sounded like somebody whisper in my ear. And this was in the winter, so there were no bugs or anything like that flying around. So it was pretty evident what it was, but it was in the exact same spot that Eric got his jacket tugged. So I don't know if it's the spirits can sense, if one person is a little more receptive than another, and that's why they try to communicate, or if it's just a random occurrence.
What are some of the results that you see that people have when they're on an investigation with you, and this is the first time that they may have an encounter with something that they just can't explain?
Well, we had our... We can actually go back to our very first investigation, and two of the guys that we worked with had also joined us, and they were both non-believers. They just absolutely did not believe in spirits, and to them it was kind of a joke that we were going. Mm-hmm. And this was the same instance where Eric was talking about the gold flakes that we were using as a trigger object. When we used that trigger object, we actually had about 5 footsteps come into the middle of the room where we were sitting. And you could hear on the digital recorder the surprise and just, I wouldn't say fear, but just surprise in the voices of the two guys that were with us that were not believers. But by the time we left that night, they definitely believed. So... that was probably one of our best experiences.
Now you said you heard footsteps. Are we talking about bare feet, or are we talking about someone wearing work boots or cowboy boots?
Well, we were in a it was actually the bordello of the town,
right?
And it had the wooden floors, and it sounded like somebody with hard sole shoes. Could have been cowboy boots, or back then even the women wore shoes with hard soles on them. And that's what it sounded like, somebody with hard sole shoes walking right into the room with us.
How would you explain to somebody listening tonight who may just be interested enough to want to follow through and find out more about what paranormal investigations are? How would you explain to them what you're looking for?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on the individual person on what they actually want to find, if they just want to do it for fun, or if they actually want to get into it and, you know, seek these answers that a lot of us are seeking for themselves. So,
what answers are you guys seeking?
I really would like to get solidified proof of, you know, that these spirits are really there, and I believe that they are, but just to be able to capture it, to show other people that, you know, these spirits are still here. Mm-hmm. They have a story to tell. There's a reason why they're still here. And I think we can learn a lot about that, a lot about the afterlife and how our bodies and the energies and our souls, what happens when we do pass.
How close do you think we are to getting some of those answers?
I think we're actually pretty close. There is so much technology out there that has popped up in the last 10 years mm-hmm. Since we've been investigating. A lot of these big teams, the ones you see on TV and stuff, they're constantly looking for new types of equipment to show the proof of the spirits and what happens in the afterlife.
Based on the work that you've done, based on the people that you've spoken to, what is your hypothesis? What is the connection? What is the missing link?
Well,
I think it's a case-by-case basis based on, you know, the spirit entity mm-hmm. in itself. So, like, if you're at a hospital and say, you know, just hypothetical, a patient goes into a hospital, they slip into a coma, and then they pass. Well, they might not know that they've actually passed. They're waking up in this hospital, and it's almost like they're stuck in a purgatory, to where maybe there's a house that a man and his wife built, and they put, you know, everything they had in this house. They grew together in this house. They grew old and they died in this house, and that's just where they want to stay. That's just where they want to be. So I think it's that comes in. That's where the investigation side comes in, and you know, you try to figure out why they're here, mm-hmm. what they're doing, if you can help them move on, or even if they want to move on, or if it's just something that's like a residual hunt, something that, you know, like a time lapse.
So let's say, for example, let's use the example that you used, the man and the woman who built the house and they were comfortable there. Mm-hmm. Do you think that if new owners take over that house, that in all fairness, someone should exorcise those people out of that house that they live in? Would this not be a little disrespectful to them?
Well, I think in a case like that, it all depends on the spirits that are there. Mm-hmm. If the spirits are not harming anyone, they're not causing any problems, anything like that, then I think it's something that the new homeowners could obviously live with. Eric and I have both lived in houses where we've had spirits in the houses, and they never caused any problems for right. us, so we just let them be as they were. But if it's a spirit that, let's say, for an example, somebody was actually murdered in the house, and you know that might be an angry spirit and may cause problems, then yeah, you might want to have somebody come in and exorcise the house or sage the house, something like that.
Yeah, but you guys are cool. You guys are really cool guys. Like, you do this. You know, you're pros at this. But I'll tell you something. If I had a house that was haunted, I would not want spirits in here. And yet, after how you explained it, would it be fair to exorcise spirits from a house that they love? Where do you draw the line?
Well, I think, again, that would come down to the individual mm-hmm. homeowner and, you know, how much they really want to know about the people that lived in the house before them and yeah. why they're there. And if they're malevolent and angry, or if it's just like, you know, you hear a few steps in the middle of the night and that's it. Or if you hear a lot of banging and stuff starting to break and, you know, your keys come up missing and, you know, you put them on the counter and they end up on the floor. I think it all really just depends on your mindset of it and how fearful you are of, I guess, the unknown in your own home.
This is for Gary. Gary, what is the strangest thing that has happened to you personally during one of your investigations?
Strangest thing. One of the things that when we were up at Oracle at the museum, mm-hmm. We were actually in the hospital room, and we had the door closed. Now, granted, this is an old building. I mean, and it's a wood building, so the doors don't really close all that well. You have to force them closed, things like that. And we were sitting in this room, and we were doing the investigation. And I was sitting right next to the door, and all of a sudden, the door popped wide open. I mean, I looked over and out the door, expecting somebody to be standing there, but there was nobody standing there. So it kind of freaked me out, but it was kind of a cool experience at the same time.
All right, Eric, how about you?
So I was in a Dodgefeld Hospital in Ajo. We were in what they call the recovery room. Mm-hmm. So that's one, it's right down the hall. It's one door room down from the operating room. And they called it the recovery room because most of the women that just gave birth, they would go in there for a few hours. So we were in that room, and it was a really heavy feeling in that room. And the investigators that are listening, they'll understand that, you know, certain areas of certain locations, rooms, hallways, you know, kitchens and basements or whatnot, they all have a different feeling as you step into them. So when you step into this in particular in the recovery room, it was very heavy, almost had like a sad feeling into it. So I'm sitting on the ground and I'm asking, you know, a few questions, and I don't know exactly why I do this, but I'm talking to as if I'm talking to a woman that's already in the room, and I'm asking, how are you doing? You know, how's your baby? And as I'm holding my recorder in between my thumb and my index finger, and I'm just holding it out kind of away from my body, and I'm sitting on the ground, something tapped the recorder and it totally spun in my hand, almost knocked it completely out of my hand. But that was probably one of the more interesting moments that I've had as an investigator.
Gary, to you, what would be the absolute proof that you would need in order to confirm to the world that ghosts are real?
Well, I would say it would definitely have to be that something that we have on video.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can sit here all night long and tell you that they're real and that I've seen them and that I've heard them and things like that. But until I have the actual proof to show somebody, to me, it's not just showing an apparition. Like I said, we've got the picture with two apparitions in it. You know, people can sit and debunk those all they want. But to have an actual apparition on video that actually somehow interacts with us, either acknowledges that we're there or even speaks to us, you know, something along those lines, I think that would be the absolute proof. But then again, you know, you're still going to have your naysayers and your doubters that try and debunk it no matter what.
How do you deal with skeptics?
We like to bring them along and change
their
mind.
Idea.
You know, through their own experiences, like we did in our first investigation. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the best way and the only way. Yeah, like Gary was just saying, you can tell people all day about your experiences, but it's kind of like the seeing is believing without seeing. You could still feel and hear things for yourself being in those situations. And I think that's the best way, because even if you show them a video, there's always like, oh, it's Photoshopped or it's editing. So on and so forth. And you put them out there in those situations, you can make a believer real quick with their own experiences.
All right, gentlemen, please stand by. We have to take our final break. Thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to join us here. I thoroughly enjoy your conversation. And Exo Nation, if you'd like to find out more about Gary and Eric and the Let Me See Arizona Paranormal Activity Team, visit them on Facebook. We'll be back as we wrap up this hour here in the X Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. Also, don't forget X Zone Nation, especially for people here in Canada, with the Thanksgiving Day celebrations being canceled because of the increase of COVID cases, particularly in Ontario and Quebec. You know, use Zoom. Pick up something called a telephone. You don't have to be away from your family. There are ways of doing it. Love will go through whatever. You can and will get through this. We all will together. I'm Rob McConnell. Don't go away.
Working in the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. To my love Notari in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast.
And welcome back, everyone. Gary and Eric from Arizona Paranormal Activity Team are with us, and you can find out all about these guys on their Facebook page, Arizona Paranormal Activity Team. First of all, guys, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and I wish you guys continued success. And because, you know, the more people that we have out there looking, the sooner the answers will be brought forth. And, you know, I was talking to Dr. Jim Horan earlier tonight, and he equated what the paranormal groups like yourself do is nothing short of what the amateur astronomers do. And junior astronomers are credited with making a number of discoveries. So I can't wait until, you know, you guys get the evidence you're looking for and share it with the world. Speaking about Halloween, how do you guys celebrate Halloween out there in Arizona?
Well, I actually, for me, it was kind of a fun holiday. It's actually one of my favorites. It was also my mom's birthday.
Oh.
So we would usually have a birthday party and a Halloween party at the same time. So we've never gone out and done any investigations on Halloween, although this Halloween probably would have been perfect for it since we got the full moon and and everything else. But usually it's a stay-at-home type of holiday.
It's funny, your mom's birthday is on Halloween. My granddaughter's birthday is on Halloween, and her name is Olivia Salem. Figure that one out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I used to joke around that every time I walked by a church with her, you know, the thing we used to vibrate, and you could feel the earth moving. But she's grown up now, and she's turned into a wonderful young lady like her mom. The paranormal is such a vast word that covers many, many, many different categories. Do you think that the quest for proof of ghost is related to other aspects of the paranormal? Do you think that you're all looking for the same thing? You're all looking for proof?
Yeah, I would say definitely. You know, for those that believe in alien life, mm-hmm. you know, I would have to totally agree with them. Just the fact that we would be so self-centered to think that we are the only beings in this whole vast universe. And same way with the paranormal. I mean, it would be self-centered to think that we're the only ones here.
If you guys could go any place to do an investigation, where would it be?
Oh, man, the list goes on and on and on.
All right, give me your top three.
For me, it would probably be Pennhurst, the Hellfire Caves, and and it would have been Linda Vista, but those three. Linda Vista's not there anymore, I don't believe.
All right, and how about
for Gary? For me, it would be the Queen Mary.
Hmm.
Probably Pennhurst also, and pretty much any of the asylums that they have on the East Coast. I would just love to go out to the East Coast and spend as much time out there and investigate as I could.
I understand you guys were part of a TV show that was filmed. What was it like?
That was like a dream come true almost for me, because it's what got me into the paranormal. Like, mm-hmm. I started watching Ghost Adventures, and, you know, Zach, Aaron, and Nick. At the time, it was those three. So to actually be able to, like, film with them and then even have a brief moment of investigating with them, it was pretty surreal. It was awesome. It was almost paranormal.
Where did you guys do your investigation?
We did it at the Dodge Phelps Hospital down in Ajo, mm-hmm. Arizona. It's a hospital that closed when they closed the mine. The mine was actually right across the street from the hospital, and the mining company owned the hospital. So when they closed the mine, they closed the hospital at the same time.
Oh. People listening to us tonight, you guys are great. You've got great energy, great vibe. You know exactly what you're talking about. And they're saying, I'd like to do that. What advice do you have for the novice coming on board who wants to be a paranormal investigator and maybe one day have their own very team?
Well, I would say one of the best things they could do is try and get in touch with a paranormal team that is in their area and see if they do guest investigations and go along with a team that maybe has all the equipment. Because I'll be honest, the equipment that we do have, it gets a little spendy going into it. But to see if they really want to get into something like this, get with another team and just investigate with them. And if they don't want to do that, all you really need is a digital recorder and go to some place like we've gone to the Adamsville Cemetery that's open to anybody. And just go in there and ask questions and see if you catch anything.
How about you, Eric? Any words of wisdom?
I would say just make sure that it's something that you really want to do. If you're just looking for like a scare or a spook, a good time, you know, do the ghost hunts that, you know, some companies run and whatnot. But if you really want to, you know, have some questions answered of your own, I mean, yeah, the more the merrier out there to help us, you know, get the answers that we're all seeking. I would just say that just make sure your heart and mind's in the right place when you do it and be safe, be knowledgeable of where you're going and be respectful of the spirits and the location where you're at.
I don't imagine that many people understand that when you and the members of your team go out there, you're spending your own money. You're buying your own equipment. It's you know, this is a dedicated pastime, and I hate to use pastime. I don't know what other word to use at this time. How do you guys... go on.
It's not like everybody sees on the TV shows where everybody's just got all the equipment and stuff like that. We have, over the years, we have just... each of us from the team has bought new equipment, and it all becomes team equipment when we do it. And some of the places that we go to investigate will actually charge us to investigate.
You're kidding.
No, it's with all these TV shows and everything that have come out now, they're looking to make a buck off of it. And some of the places that we'd like to investigate, like the Birdcage Theater, right, Tombstone, or the Yuma Territorial Prison, they want an unbelievable amount of money just to investigate.
How much money do they want?
I believe it was the Birdcage Theater wanted like $100 an hour.
Ooh.
For the team. And I believe it was Yuma Territorial Prison wanted like $50 an hour per person. And we had to have $1 million insurance policy on the team.
This is getting ridiculous.
Yeah. That's why it's getting harder and harder to find places to investigate. That's why we're always welcome. The people, if they want to let us know about places that they know of, they can contact us on our Facebook page. Or if they have a location like their own house or something like that. We, like I said, we definitely do residentials. So, you know, we're open to anything. We just like to get out there and do the investigations.
I find it so disgusting that these places are charging you folks because they see an opportunity. This is in my books, this is all wrong.
Right. You know, and you got your TV shows and stuff like one of the places down in Bisbee, Arizona, there's the Copper Queen Hotel, and the TV show that we were on, they had investigated down there, and I talked to the people down there, and they said that, yeah, they have the backing of the Travel Channel, so they rented out the entire hotel. So a place like that where we would like to investigate, more than likely we're not going to get a lot of investigation done just because we don't have the funding that these TV shows have.
You know, that is sad. This really bothers me. You know, you people, you're not backed by the Travel Channel or any other network. You do it for passion, not for pay.
Correct. If we have people that'll call us or message us or something like that, they want us to do a residential investigation. And a lot of times I've had them ask, you know, how much do you guys charge? We don't charge anything. We do this for our own passion.
That's commendable, guys. Really commendable. Listen, we've got about 3.5 minutes before you and I have to say so long for tonight. Again, thanks very much for coming on the show, and I hope that you and, you know, both of you, Gary and Eric, will come on again in the future and share some more of the stories from Arizona. But right now, what would you like to share with the members of the Worldwide Exo Nation tonight?
We already went over it. If you're interested in going out there and helping out the search for the answers, you know, jump right into it. Just do it with the right mind and heart set when you're doing it. Be safe. And, you know, together, the more people we have out there searching for these answers, the quicker we'll find them.
Something that I heard from, I'm sorry, Gary or Eric.
Yeah, I'd just like to add, the other thing is, and this is just with the paranormal investigations, this is with everything in life, just have an open mind. That really opens up your life to a lot of, a lot of different avenues.
How many members are there to your team, all told?
We have 6 members on our team. There's Eric and myself. Mm-hmm. We're the co-founders of the team. And then we have Tina Garcia, Chris and Tiffany Loomis, and then my son, Seth Thunderhawk.
Well, do me a favor. Please give them my very best and thank them for the work that they do, too. Any final thoughts?
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to maybe open some people's minds and maybe we'll get a few more people out there investigating.
Well, I hope so. And if there's anything we can do to help you guys out, please let me know. Before we go, I've heard one or two groups complain that information is not shared with other paranormal groups. You know, the evidence, the findings. Is this common where everybody wants to keep what they find close-knit?
Well, I think that, everybody wants to have that one piece of evidence that may, answer the question. But there are actual websites out there and forums and communities where it is a shared space for you to share your information, your evidence, and your thoughts and practices with each other. And we've been known, and we've done it quite a few times, if we investigate somewhere where another group's investigated, we'll actually reach out to them and ask them, what they've experienced, what they've done. And they've always been really friendly. So it's just about reaching out to your community, get on the social media and whatnot, and find these forums and groups. And we're all willing to help each other out from what I've experienced so far.
Excellent. Well, guys, it's that time where you and I have to say so long for tonight. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I look forward to the next time you join us. And just keep the great work up. And if you come across anything thrilling, exciting, give me a call. Love to have you back on.
Thank you. We will. Thank you.
Good night, guys. Take care. All right, Exo Nation, if you'd like to find out more about Eric and Gary and the rest of the gang at the Arizona Paranormal Activity Team, visit them on Facebook. All right. Here it is, another Halloween in the Exo. I'll be back on the other side as we continue talking about ghosts, hauntings, witches, things that go bump in the night. And I'm not talking about my producer, Craig, after he fills up on chicken wings. I'm Rob McConnell. This is The X-Zone, a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern. Don't go away.